This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at BestWestern.com.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
Ugh, you said you were over him, but his hoodie is still in your rotation. It's time. Grab your phone, snap a few pics, and sell it on Depop. List it in minutes with no selling fees. And just like that, a guy 500 miles away just paid full price for your closure. And right on cue.
Hey, still got my hoodie?
Nope. But I've got tonight's dinner paid for. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. List now with no selling fees. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
My name is Bear Siragusa, and you are listening to the Hunting Hound Podcast, presented by W Hunting Supply. Well, it's that time of year again here, where nothing's happening. It's warm, it's wet. It's gross. The hare season ended in February. The lynx season ended in February. The fox season ended in April. But realistically, we were done before that. We got an unseasonable thaw in March, and it created a crust that just kind of never went away. And we were able to get out, but the foxes were on top. We were punching through and shredding ankles and feet and breaking claws and things like that. So it wasn't a good situation for anybody. And we got out, but it wasn't, we didn't get much done. So we've got a couple of weeks now, or longer than that, close to 2 months now, where we're going to have to just take it easy. 21st of August is when our fox season starts up again. And the hare season doesn't start up until wintertime, until the snow flies. So, and the lynx season doesn't start up until February again. So we've got some downtime here, which I don't like. I don't like downtime. I'm kind of a fidgety guy. And not just with myself, but with my hounds. I don't like seeing, I enjoy seeing my hounds sunning themselves and, you know, enjoying their vacation. Don't get me wrong. But I don't want to start my season with fat, out of shape, you know, flaccid hounds with long claws and, you know, smooth feet. It's not what I want. I want my dogs to start the season ready to rock and roll. They don't need to be in top shape. That'll come as the season goes. You know, we're out 5 days a week. So, you know, they'll get into shape and it'll happen quickly. But if I start the season with them not in shape, I'm going to have injuries. I'm going to have things that are going to slow us down. If I start the season with them in decent shape, then I'm going to be in good shape. You know, I'm going to be able to get the job done. We're going to be able to get the job done in a way that I find okay. And also, you know, I hate watching an out of shape dog run. It drives me nuts. It comes from my sled dog years. It drives me insane. I do not like it. So I do things to keep my hounds in shape during the summertime. And I do a bunch of different things. You know, I'll bike a little bit with them, or I'll let them run around in a big pen, tossing balls and things like that. Let them wrestle and kind of keep all of that supportive tissue strong and in good shape so that they don't blow out knees and ankles and wrists and shoulders and things once we get rolling. But another thing that I really like to do is some mental exercises for them. And I'm not talking about, you know, kibble mazes or those little pads with the where the dogs can quote unquote talk to you by stepping on. No, that's not what I'm talking about. That's insane. What I'm talking about is doing things that are applicable to what we're at, the job they're going to be expected to do in the fall, or in my case, the fall. And one of the things, the thing that I like to do the most is blood trailing. And the reason I like to do that is because the skills that they need for blood trailing are applicable to what I'm going to be asking them to do once the season starts up again. So they're going to be using their, you know, they're obviously going to be using their noses. They're going to be needing to, I can set up the blood trail so that they're going to need to work off of a loss. And where they are going to need to use those mental aspects of what it requires to be able to get the job done once we're rolling again. The first dog that I did blood trails with was Virpi, who's that American foxhound bitch. And she was my first hound and had a really rough start. She had, when I picked her up, she was 13, 14 months old and had a litter of pups that was 6 months old at that point. She'd had a litter put on her first heat cycle. When she was, her original owner, not the guy I bought her from, or he gave her to me actually. The guy I got her from was a good guy with some very good hounds. The original owner was not as solid. So what would happen is he would go out with her as a teeny tiny puppy, like real, real small. And he would drop her together with this big old nasty hound that he had. And every time she would open up, that hound would go over there, beat her up a little bit, and then take over the track. She naturally had a better nose than that other hound. So both of them would kind of chill. Both the guy and the hound would kind of chill until she picked something up, and then they'd go over, take it over. And then the guy would leave her to do whatever she wanted to do while he followed the adult hound, sometimes hopping in his truck and leaving. And they were hunting fox, so they'd get to a den and he'd dig it up and stuff like that. And she'd be out there, you know, 12 weeks old, just by herself in the woods, wondering where the hell is everybody. So she learned that she needed to stay real close to that guy or he was going to ditch her. And she was going to be by herself for 5 or 6 hours. She also learned that every time she opened up, this big monster was going to come out of the forest and beat up on her and take over her track. So she learned to not open up. She also learned that while she was by herself, she kind of eventually decided to amuse herself, and she did that by chasing deer, which was a major pain to break her of once she came. But that's a story for another time. But ultimately, by the time I got her, she had had a litter of puppies at a young age, and had all of her experiences in the forest had been more or less negative. So what would happen when I dropped her is she would stay right close to me, would not open up on a track, even a fresh track. She would want to. I could hear that she wanted to, but she wouldn't. She would want to run it, but she wouldn't. She was so insecure and so afraid that she wouldn't do any of it. So rather than continuing to butt both of our heads up against a wall trying to figure this out in the field, what I did is I backed way, way off, and I laid blood trails for her. And in the beginning, I laid very, very small blood trails, you know, 30 or 40 yards, a yard between each drop of blood, and had her on a long line. Didn't have a lot of turns or anything like that. It was pretty much a straight line in the beginning where I laid the track and let her go ahead of me. Every time she came back to my side, every time she went behind me, I would stop. She was the one that needed to drive the track, even if it went horrendously slowly. And she wanted to. I could tell she was interested, but she was so afraid of what would happen if she moved along the track that she wouldn't do it. But after half hour or so, she started just kind of picking along 2-3 feet in front of me, nothing big. I had her on the long line and eventually got to the end of the track. At the end of the track, I would usually put a couple of pieces of kibble or maybe a hot dog, something like that. That made a big difference for her. That little moment of success where she, you know, got a very sort of basic visceral reward with food. I don't like to use treats for my dogs. I would like them to listen to me because they want to listen to me, because I've gained their respect. And it's a positive thing for them to listen to me. I don't want to do it. I don't want to bribe them to listen to me. But I may use treats to help them learn the behavior that I'm asking of them. Once I know that they know it, then I want them to do it because I've asked them to do it. But, you know, the treats or the piece, you know, rewards. I want that to be something that I only use when I'm trying to teach a behavior. But with Vichby, she was so damaged that I used that technique for quite a while with her, where I would let her walk a trail just right in front of me, and then shower her with praise when she got to the end, and have that sort of that thing in the back of her mind that, like, I know that if I do this, I'm going to get something good to eat. And eventually what happened is she went a little bit farther out from me, you know, went 6 feet instead of 3 feet. And eventually was 10 feet out there instead of, you know, and eventually was at the end of the line. And this was over the course of, you know, 3 or 4 months. And I started throwing in some challenges, started throwing in some 90 degree turns. I started throwing in some where we would go out 10 or 15 feet and then go back, and there would be a, you know, sort of copying an animal going back in its own tracks and then hopping out to the side, because I've experienced deer, fox, and hare have all done that to me, where they'll run 15 feet out, turn around, run back, and then do this big, huge leap off to the side and try and shake off whatever's behind them. So I started copying those things. And as we continued, VHP's confidence started to get better and better. She would get happier and happier. She stopped looking over her shoulder all the time. She stopped kind of jumping at every little sound, because she was slowly losing her fear that something horrible was going to come out of the forest and beat on her. And in the end, I was able to drop the long line, and she was able to roll along a blood trail way in front of me and do the work. there were, you know, we hit some roadblocks there. One of the funnier ones was I laid a blood trail, and I like to let them sit for a while. You know, in the beginning, I only let them sit from, you know, maybe 45 minutes, an hour. And towards the end, I would let them sit for 24 hours before I would go out with her. And there was a couple of times where she was just really struggling to work that track. And, you know, blood is blood. It's fairly strong smelling, and the tracking conditions were decent, so I didn't totally understand why. And it had been a little bit long since I'd put the track down. You know, it'd been, and we'd gotten a little bit of rain, so I thought maybe that was it, you know, that maybe that was the issue why she wasn't able to work it. And, you know, it was kind of rocky, dry terrain, so I wasn't upset about it, but was kind of scratching my head. She didn't usually struggle. And we got to the end eventually. It took us a long time, but we eventually got to the end of the track, and the dog food that I'd put there was gone. I thought, okay, maybe birds had rolled through or something like that. But around the dog food, I could see big Newfoundland tracks. So what had happened is our Newfoundland dog had gotten out, walked the trail, licked up all the blood, and eaten the hot dogs before we had gotten the chance to get out there. So I had to make sure from then on that the Newfoundland was in the house when I laid trail, so he would follow behind me far enough so that I couldn't see him and lick up and eat all my blood trails. So that was a huge, huge step in the right direction. After a while, I could run her on blood trails without the long line, and she would do the work. I was able to eventually put down longer blood trails and have a GPS collar on her and be able to, from a distance, see that she was on the correct trail, and was able to add increased difficulty to it. It kept her physically in shape. It kept her mentally in shape, and it slowly worked her through some of the skeletons she had in her closet, some of the demons she had. Super positive for her, super positive for me, and eventually she turned into a decent dog. Vidpi's deal is that those skeletons still pop up. She still has days where she is just not that functional. She'll go way out from me. She'll go, you know, but sometimes she still won't open up. And it's super frustrating because on the days where she's good, she's really good. She's the best hound that I have. But on those days are maybe 2 out of every 10. So not a dog I can depend on, not a dog that I, you know, can really bank on doing what I need her to do. So kind of frustrating, but the positive to that was that at the time she was my first hound, and I learned a ton working through some of her demons with her, skills that then have translated really, really well to my younger dogs and really, really well to her. She's gotten farther. She's done things that I never thought she was going to be capable of doing. And like I said, she's not a dog I can depend on, but she's turned into a decent dog, which I really appreciate. I didn't have any other hounds at the time, and I also had been in dogs long enough to know that the challenging ones are often the ones that you learn the most from. So I figured that here's a dog that's already broken. I'm not going to break her anymore, so I may as well try and see what we can accomplish and see what I can learn in the process. And it ended up being very positive for us both. So I still do blood trails with both her and my other dogs. And during the summertime, it's such a positive thing for us because, like I said, they're using all of the skills that they're going to, or a lot of the skills anyway, that they're going to need once we get rolling again in the fall. And, you know, because you've got them on the long line here, you've got the leash laws. So I have to have them on a long line. And I've got some nosy neighbors that, if they spent as much time paying attention to their own dogs and as they do paying attention to me and my dogs, maybe their dogs would be a little bit better. But so I need to be real aware of the fact that I follow the rules, which I, you know, is fine with me. So I've got to run them on the long line. I've got to have control of them the whole time. But it keeps me in shape. It keeps them in shape. Both mentally and physically. It keeps their feet worn down and in good shape. It keeps their muscles and tendons in good shape. And, you know, really mentally, it keeps them sharp. By the time we hit the ground in the fall, they're already mentally prepared to deal with losses. They're already mentally prepared to deal with backtracks. They're already mentally prepared to deal with the challenges that I'm going to be throwing at them and that the animals that we're hunting are going to be throwing at them. The other thing that I like is, especially during the summer months, I've had dogs heat stroke out on me, and I don't, it's a horrible, horrible way to die. I don't, you know, I do a lot to avoid that. So it's another thing I like about it is I've got total control of them. I've got the long line. If I see that the conditions have gotten really not good, I may pull them off, or at least take a break, toss them in a stream, you know, whatever. It gives me the opportunity to adjust in a way that when they're out on their own, I can't. They can't do the damage to themselves that they can when they're on their own, which during the hot summer months is ideal for me, you know, who have had some bad experiences. I want to go over quickly how I kind of set up younger dogs and the progression of the blood trailing. Most of the places that I've lived in my life, it's been possible to buy blood either at a butcher shop or at the local stores here. And in Maine, the local stores, you could buy pig's blood and beef blood. I'll put it into a little like ketchup container, like a little squirty container, and I'll do a drop every 3 feet. And this is starting out with pups. I'll do a drop every 3 feet, maybe. And I'll keep it pretty short. Maybe in a mellow kind of bow shape or even a straight line. And like I said, a little bit of kibble, a hot dog, something at the end. It gets them bought in, makes it really super positive for them. As they progress, and you know, that I'll keep them doing that for a little while. Just keep it fun. I don't want to do it too much that they start to burn out. I've seen too many people do the blood trailing and burn their young dogs out because it is mentally challenging for them. I'll slowly build them up. And what I mean by that is I will slowly increase the length of the trails. I will slowly increase the difficulty with, you know, some of the backtracking, some of the 90 degree turns, some things like that. I won't increase two things at one time. I'm not going to increase the length and the difficulty on the same blood trail. I'll do one or the other. I'll still occasionally, just to give them a little bit of a layup, I will occasionally lay a really easy trail for them. And I'll still do that with my adults, where they will be pleasantly surprised that, oh, heck, we're at the end of the trail already. This was easy. Just so that I'm not always pushing the envelope, not always asking them to do a little bit better than what they did the day before. And, you know, it's how I like to do things that way. I find that it sets them up for success in a way that I really appreciate. Once the fall rolls around, I'll stop doing the blood trails. I don't do much of it once the season starts, but I don't see much point in it. Because then they're practicing the skills that ultimately the blood trailing is trying to accommodate. However, here in Norway, you are required to have a blood trailing dog at your disposal. You have to have a written agreement with a registered, certified blood trailing dog before you can hunt anything with a rifle. So you need to, if you're hunting roe deer, anything from roe deer up, you need to have a blood trailing dog at your disposal, where if you shoot one and you don't find it right away, where you can get somebody in there to help you find that animal. And they are very, very strict about it. They've got very strict rules and very strict sort of set of circumstances that you need to follow before they're going to allow that animal to be declared either lost or you know, healthy enough to live. And if you shoot at something, for example, during the moose hunting season where you've got a quota and everybody's hunting, you know, you've got these bigger teams hunting. If you shoot at a moose and you wound it, your next 2 days are going to be used looking for that moose. And it's only on the third day that the blood trailing dog, the owner and, you know, the handler of the blood trailing dog can declare that that animal is healthy enough to have survived when they can't find it. So the blood trailing thing is it's an important aspect of everything that we do here. And in addition, there are people who actually are professional blood trailers where the counties and the states will call them in when animals have been hit by, you know, when there's been traffic related animal incidences, you know, moose being hit by cars, roe deer being hit by cars, whatever. They'll call them in with their blood trailing hounds or dogs. It's mostly hounds. And get them to assist in putting that animal out of its misery, especially if it gets up and runs. So it's a requirement here. And I found that most of the time I have yet to need to call in another blood trailing dog. I've only had two incidences where I've needed one, and both times it was because they ended up in very tight sort of willowy scrub and I just was having a hard time finding them. Vietby found them both, no problem. It's a good tool to have in your back pocket. And I see that there are more houndsmen taking some time to do that kind of thing with them. One of the guys that I would really like to talk to more about this is Sam Natoli. He's done over in Maine there. He's done quite a bit of blood trailing with his ranger dog, that Coles National Cat Hound, and has had a lot of success doing that and has found that not only does it give him sort of an extra tool in his tool belt, but it in no way affects the quality of ranger when he's dropped on, you know, cat or bear. He's ready to roll. It's not diminishing him in any way having that other skill set. So look for that in the nearish future. I'm going to talk to Sam and Samantha and see if we can sit down. We've been talking about it for a while, and it's been kind of hectic and busy here. So, but we're going to get that done here in not too long, I think. So blood trailing, I can't say enough good about it. There's really no downsides to it. It requires very little infrastructure. It doesn't cost a lot of money. It's cheap, good fun, and it keeps your dogs in good shape, both mentally and physically. The only thing is it requires you to go out before you drop your hounds and lay a track. And, you know, if you've got little kids like I do, sometimes I'll just send them out and have them do it. And that can be ideal, too, because occasionally, you know, I think without being aware of it, I can give them physical signals. The dogs also, you know, the physical signals of which direction they should be going. So if I go out and lay a track, I know where the track should be. And that can be a little challenging too, actually being out in the, you know, being out in the bush and keeping track of exactly where your blood trail was put. So one of the things I do is I put, I cut a bunch of ribbons, bright orange ribbons, and stapled them to clothespins. And then I put the clothespins in trees and twigs and on, you know, even on the ground along where the track is, just so that I know where it is, to make sure that the hound or the, you know, the pups at that point are doing what I want them to be doing. But I will have my kids do that occasionally so that I don't know where the track is. So it's new to me too. So I can't give the dog necessarily the cues that I want, the direction that I want them to go. So there's a bunch of different ways to do it, but it's a lot of fun. You can get creative with it. You can do a bunch of different things, and it's super positive for everybody. So that's it. Just wanted to talk a little bit about blood trailing, and I've gotten to do that. I hope everybody is doing well. It's going to be a few months before we get rolling again here with the hounds. Some of you guys are still rolling, And I hope your seasons are going well. Reach out on Facebook, The Hunting Hound Facebook page. I'm on Instagram at The Hunting Hound. And yeah, check out some of the other podcasts on the W platform. We've got some really, really good ones these days. Heath Hyatt is killing it. Steve Fielder is just consistently really good episodes. Enjoying the stuff Buddy and Jason are putting out, and it's really cool to see Brett back on the platform as well. So hope you guys are enjoying it as much as I am. And yeah, keep hunting.
Man, I love that sound.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.